Sahana vavatu, sahanau bhunaktu, sahaviryan karavavahai, tejasvinavadhitamastomavidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Basari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
What? Where's it from?
Mother Japan, please.
Oh, okay. Do you know what deity?
No.
Okay, Bhagavat Sandarbha, Adhyayana 4, Adhikarna 5. Bhagavan is the object of all Vedic knowledge. It means all knowledge is there. It's all there to worship the Lord. It's all directed to the Lord, all to please the Lord. Right? So if the material world is given and is created for us to elevate ourselves back to the spiritual world, then that means the instructions given in the spiritual world of the Veda is also how to connect everything to Krishna. That it won't be something else. So it's very consistent. So we see is that there's a real consistency in the presentation of the Vaishnava Acharyas. What you see with others then, sometimes it's this way, sometimes it's that way, yes.
Can we say that Jiva Goswami bases his satsandharvas on Vedanta Sutra?
It's based on Bhagavatam. That's why it'll look, because Bhagavatam is the natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra. And so therefore then it being a thematic study of Bhagavatam, then it will naturally then have the aspect of a study of Vedanta Sutra. Means the format that he uses is the same kind of format. You know, that he's using like the presentation of Nyaya. But it's based on Bhagavatam. While the Vedanta Sutra is on Upanishads.
Because we also said that Vedanta Sutra is the natural commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam.
No.
Oh.
The other way around.
Yeah.
Srimad Bhagavatam is a natural commentary in Vedanta Sutra. So in commenting, showing the theme of Bhagavatam, then you're showing the theme of the Vedanta Sutra and of the Upanishads. And the Upanishads are the essence of the Veda. So in other words, Bhagavatam is the essence of the Veda, and this is so that you'll be your seriatim. You know, approach, and this is the, can't even remember the name.
Thematic,
that's the more, you know, the locals can understand it. They have a fancy name for it. No, some other, you know, old Greek name or something. Yeah. So that's why you'll see is that it has a form like Vedanta Sutra, but at the same time it doesn't have that dryness that will be there. Like that. Because it's all on Bhagavatam. Because for Jiva Goswami, his point is he may use the sutra format, but for him it's somebody understanding what's going on is more important than the shortness of the sutra. You know, while generally in sutras, then one of the elements of it is that you're saying everything in the most concise way possible. So that means by the grammar, you can shorten things by using another, you know, a different form of the grammar so that the root comes out differently, or using a different root or something like that. that you can end up with the least amount of syllables. So in the shortest amount of space, you explain the fullest amount. But then the difficulty with that is the person who's writing it knows what he's saying, and those who have studied it under a teacher may know what he's saying, but anybody else won't know what's going on. So Jiva Goswami likes to give very full explanations, even though he's using that format of give book. And the other aspect is that, okay, it's a thematic study of Bhagavatam, but how is it a thematic study? You know, what's the hermeneutics? Hermeneutics will be Lord Chaitanya's Dasamul. So how it's presented is the Dasamul Tattva. So that's why when Srila Prabhupada mentions, we follow in the footsteps of the six Goswamis headed by Srila Rupa Goswami, but on the path chalked out by Jiva Goswami. With that, that's then what we're doing. Does that make sense? You understand how it falls? Yeah. So then in the six, then four of them will deal with the Sambandha, one with Abhideya, one with Prayojana. Does that make sense? So you can say it's... It has that Dasamul, but it also has that aspect, it's the philosophy, where it'll also have that Vedic of, you know, Chitta, Chitteshwara, Sadhana, Sadhya. Does that make sense? So it'll be covering those, but it'll all be from the three features of Krishna. Does that make sense? So the aspects of the Jiva are included, the aspects of the mature world are included.
That's why we say that four are in Sambandha. Because there is more information and more...
No, because there that means from the Dasamul, then the first Sandarbha is Tattva Sandarbha. So it's on establishing Pramana. Right? And then after that, the other five are dealing with the Prameyas. So in that, to make it very clear that it's all centered around Krishna... Then the Bhagavat Sandarbha is dealing with the first point is Krishna is the absolute truth. But Paramatma Sandarbha, that he's the Lord of all energies. Right? And then the Krishna Sandarbha, that he is the Lord of Rasa. So that those three. Now the next three, then about the nature of the jivas, and then conditioned jivas, liberated jivas, and then the Achinta Beta Beta Tattva, those four are just worked into these three. Those four points from the Dasamul, those are worked into the three Sandarbhas that are just on Krishna. The three features of Krishna. Does that make sense? Oh. You understand Dasamul? Right. So Dasamul you have in the... means you have the Pramana, which is then the Shastra, right? So that we've covered, right? Then the next six are going to be, right? No, excuse me, seven. It's going to be the three features of Krishna, right? It's the Supreme Absolute Truth, the Lord of the Energies, and the Lord of Rasa, right? Then it's going to have the living entities, the generic definition, then the condition, and then the liberated as two more. And then Achinta Beta Beta Tattva. Right? So it's just explaining that all those are there. Right? So then in the explanation of these first three of Krishna, right, then he's using that view of Achinta Beta Beta Tattva, and the nature of the jivas are worked into these three. So in three books, you're covering seven subjects, all centered around Krishna. Does that make sense?
So it's Bhagavat Sandarbha, Paramatma Sandarbha, and this one?
Krishna Sandarbha. Does that make sense? Yeah. So like that. Then Bhakti Sandarbha will be about the Abhideya, and Preeti Sandarbha will be about Prayojana. So the full Dasamul is there. So that's this is where you actually see it. You know, in an analytical form. But it's just so expertly done it takes care of the nature of the Upanishadic presentation, the Vedanta Sutra presentation, and the Bhagavatam presentation, according to Lord Chaitanya's Dasamoha. So it's just, that's why it's, you know, that's why the statement is made, is that in the contemporary era, there is no scholar greater than Jiva Goswami. I mean, contemporary, we don't mean like nowadays. We mean, you know, Kali Yuga. Like that.
And he gave his own commentaries on Satsang Dharmas?
Yes, sometimes when needed, then he write his own commentary. So it's a very standard thing in Vedic literature. In the West, they can't understand it at all. But you write a book, and then you write your commentary. See, because in the modern is that, why wouldn't you put the two together? But the difficulty is, when they're put together, then you may not catch what the essential points are. Because when you first time read it, you don't know what's going on. So you're learning. So then you have the essential points, what's the actual book, and then you have comments on the, as is seen important. And so you could say, "Is well, why can't it be combined?" You know, that's you know, modern literary approach. But then the difficulty comes up is that then when you do know what's going on, you won't necessarily see that thematic line that's there in the main study. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point. And also that it gives rise to, you can write in more commentaries. You've written your commentary. If others write a commentary also, then it all matches. How do you put that into how would you break that up in just a book written in the modern format? You know, how do you stick those in there? You know, you have to do it with footnotes, this, that, but here it's just right there. That's the verse, then here's the comment. You know, like you see, Bhagavad Gita is there, then Prabhupada will put in his purports. Prabhupada say there'll be purports on his purports. Why won't they be? Because the acharyas have written purports, and we see other acharyas have written purports on those. Because the level of understanding we may or may not appreciate. So they bring it so that we can appreciate it. So it has, it's a Vedic system like that. But it's very efficient, very perfect. So they can't understand. Like read Bhagavatamrita, and then having written that, then he writes his commentary. Because in the story, you can tell the story, but if you go into all those other things, you lose the story. So, yes, that's true. Okay. So, page 57. Now we're on the Purva Paksha. According to you, the Lord can be indicated by words, right? Because we're saying that when the chit potency is there, yes, words can will have the potency to explain. This makes the Lord material, right? Because the words are material. They can't understand. That's like saying, you're saying that this machine runs by electricity. So that means you're saying the electricity is like an external machine. Right? Your toaster runs by it. They're saying, no, the toaster is an illusion. It's just there working, but it doesn't actually have, you know, a reality. Like that. It's illusion. We're saying, no, it's working because of electricity. That's why it works. They're saying, oh, well, if you're saying it works by electricity, then you're saying electricity is a toaster. Right? This is the intelligence we're working with. Now, how could such intelligent, scholarly people, who can sit there and argue for days over a syllable, with all grammatical, you know, support and this and that, how could they make such foolish mistakes? Right? That's because of the Ajnana Shakti. Right? Because without Krishna revealing it to you, you won't know him. That's the point. They're taking it that I, through logic, have to know the Lord. When actually, no, it's the Lord will reveal himself. You follow the process that he recommends, he'll reveal. Right? You know, just like, let's say you want to meet a big person. You know, you have to go through the process. You have to go to the officer, whatever is there, put in your name, they'll do the background check, things like this. You actually have some reason or some bona fide reason to meet, then they'll work in, you know, what's the quality, then they'll work in a time, and then you come at that time, you go through your particular security, this, that, you sit in the particular waiting room, this, that, then finally you see. But they want to just say, no, no, because, you know, like that, I'm so special, because I'm God, I can just walk right in. And it never works. So the only thing they can walk into is the office that they're supposed to apply in. And then they wonder, you know, so then, you know, this, the person's not a person, it's only an office. So that's the difficulty, is that they're saying the Lord is transcendental, means as Brahman. But they're not acknowledging that as that, then how can he, how he can, if he's all pervading, why can't he be pervading something that is, you know, material? Why can't the potency that makes all the material things function be Brahman? So it's really unintelligent. But we see is why would that be? Because they have a motive. They want to be God. They want to merge in God and be God. They want to get rid of all this. It gives me problem. And so it's just like, what was it? There was that, a story of, I think it was, Hitler had attacked France or something. He got defeated. And he had to, and in a certain place, he had to sign a treaty. And then he, you know, retreated. Then later, when he became more powerful, he came back, defeated France. And then one of the first things he did, he went to that place where he had to sign the treaty. It was a bunker. And blew it up. They just can't tolerate that, you know, I'm defeated. So the material world is defeated. The living entity, they can't tolerate that because their ego is so big that I'm God. So therefore, they want to get rid of and destroy the material energy. They just, you know, it's an illusion. It doesn't matter, you know. You know, it's just like if somebody's giving you trouble and you're feeling bad, someone will say, "Oh, where is that? They're not important." Yeah. So there's always that thing of because the mode of ignorance of that destruction. Right? So it's not as extreme as the Buddhists. You know, that's just pure mode of ignorance. Here there's that little touch of goodness, you know, in the Veda. But they can't appreciate that if the Lord is there and he's transcendental, why his potency can't make other things? Why can't he pervade these things? As material energy is so powerful, Brahman can't deal with it? Because in their mind, Brahman, covered by Maya, then becomes the jivas, you know, and then covered by knowledge, then becomes the Ishwara, you know, but they're all considered all illusion. So they don't actually have a very high regard for Brahman, even though for them it's all about Brahman and all that. So Brahman's great because that way they're the greatest, so they'll become. So because they're flawed, then, you know, like this. And so they put Brahman as flawed so that they have a chance. But once they become to that, then they're perfect. So you can see underlying is that it's just their own personal motive. So all these philosophies other than pure Vaishnava, there's always a motive. But the pure Vaishnava, that means, and you know, what's it? Ahaituki apratihata. It means that no material desire. So that's unique. So that's what the Veda is talking about. Does that make sense? So here, because we've established that the words and all that, so he defeated them on one side. Then, you know, here. Just this is then Jiva Goswami. Just as the intelligence and senses can perceive the paratattva by the appearance of the chit shakti, by some degree of favorability of the Lord, so shruti, a form of words, can express directly the tattva without material gunas, by a methodical appearance of the chit shakti. Since the Shrutis are suitable to deal with things beyond the gunas, right? So the words that they're using and all that are suitable for expressing what's beyond the gunas. Then being empowered with that, it works. You know, just like the toaster is the right thing for making toast. Therefore, when empowered with electricity, you can make toast with it. Right? To say, oh, but, you know, it's steel and it's plastic and, you know, like this, how can that make toast? You know? But, and if nothing else, you can grab it by the cord, right? Because generally toasters have a really strong cord, because otherwise you're always using it. Swing it around and hit the guy, this Mayavadi, in the head with it, right? And then you can say, when he falls over unconscious, then you turn to your friend, or your friend will turn to you and say, well, he's toast. Right? So there's various ways to make toast. Those who are favorable and those who are unfavorable. So Brahman can be described by human words. Right? So now their point is, Purvapaksha, according to you, right? They're not saying, oh, so it's like that. They're just saying, according to you, you're saying this, the Lord can be indicated by words, right? They don't even listen to what's said before. So this makes the Lord material, right? So you're saying he's material? For Shruti say, yato vacho nivartante aprapya manasa saha. Words along with mind not attaining the Lord return. Taittiriya Upanishad. But what they don't catch here is not attaining the Lord return. So for them, they are speaking material words because they don't attain the Lord, so the words come back. Yad vachana bhyuditam yena vag abhyudyate tad eva brahma tvam vidhi. Know that Brahma, which cannot be expressed by words, by which words arise. So they take cannot be expressed, but what about and by which words arise? That means they're coming from Brahman. You can't describe Brahman by words, but words are coming from Brahman. So then if you see the connection with Brahman, then those words can describe. So words on their own can't. But it's the connection to Brahman, like the previous one. Katha Upanishad 1:4. So even their examples, they defeat themselves because they're looking at it the wrong way. Then, did I mention the Upanishad? Katha Upanishad 1:4. Yat shrotram na shrinoti yena shrotram idam shrutam. The ear does not hear him. He does not hear using an ear. So, but it said he hears. So they don't catch that side. They only catch the impersonal side. They don't catch the personal side. It's a fault. These Shruti statements show that the Lord cannot be directly described by words. Uttara. There is a fault by directly indicating the Lord. Why does the fault not apply also to indirect indications? Right? Because as we saw before, you can't describe directly. So therefore they interpret the words and then describe. And then in that description they're saying, now we're describing Brahman. Right? The ones that directly say is a person that, no, you have to live by lakshana. Now when we do, now it's, so the point is this, but you're saying you can describe Brahman. You know, because we're using it to describe how Brahman means Bhagavan. And the Brahma Jyoti is a dependent feature of the Lord. Or a subordinate feature. Okay, if there's a fault by directly indicating the Lord, why does the fault not also apply to indirect indications? Since both are subject to the same function of words. The Lord is not directly indicated as a material subject, but can be indicated as being indescribable by Lord words. So you are indicating the Lord. Purvapaksha. The Lord appears by himself after his self-manifesting Shakti, in the form of Shruti, dispels notions of a material object, like dispelling darkness. Like, so he comes and that, and thus dispels that there are, what do you call it? Any illusions and all that by his appearance. Thus, he is not actually indicated by Shruti. Shruti only dispels misconceptions. The Lord is like the sun, which reveals itself as well as a pot when it makes its appearance. Right? So they're saying that they're using the right quotes, but then they don't understand what they're talking about. You know? You know, it'd be like, you know, saying that, you know, no, but the toaster, you know, how can you say supreme? You can't drive to work in a toaster. It's like, whoever said we're driving to work in a toaster? But, you know, that's what they do. Is that because they deal in lakshana, they can never take things directly. So even these direct quotes that show, they'll always give an indirect understanding, yes.
They always want to distinguish between the Shakti and Shaktiman so that Shakti is for their enjoyment.
Okay. Yeah, because if they become the Lord, then now they can enjoy Shakti. That's even a further point. Because now they're trying to enjoy Shakti, and it's not working. So if they become God, because Shakti belongs to God, now they can enjoy Shakti. Yes?
I was thinking when we were reading right in the beginning the description of the purpose of material creation for the jivas to come back to Godhead.
Right.
I thought the same exact point, but from a different angle, is that all the contemporary religions, they say the material world is created for our enjoyment.
Yes.
And then the heaven, or however they call that part,
right,
is also for the enjoyment. So
yeah.
Same Maya bodies. It's
yeah.
Exactly the same.
Same. That's why it's not very developed. So that they're accepting a monotheistic, you know, supreme. That's the important aspect of the philosophy, and that there is a sense of gratitude, there is a sense of obligation, and possibly can be even a sense of devotion. These are the strong points. But because of their own particular material desires and all that, then they'll point out what is important to them. Like, I mean, I don't know these Christians, you just get the idea that there's clouds there and there's a gate and Peter's there. No, Paul, yeah, Peter's there. I'm not sure if Paul makes it there, but Peter's there. And, you know, and then you're let in. And then, but what's on the other, that you don't know, you only know the gate and the clouds, right? Muslims talk about the green embroidered couches with the virgins. You don't hear any more than that. Do they have food? Do they anything else? Anything like that. So, like that, you know. Then I remember sitting in someone's house and looking through a little leaflet or pamphlet on Jehovah's Witnesses. And there, then it's all like this nice park and all that, and you're there with your family. And I remember this one, it's like there's this, they're in a boat, you know, on the lake, you know, enjoying themselves. And in the boat, there's this big, you know, cuddly, fluffy, full-sized lion that the little daughter is hugging. And they say that the and they talk, you know. So it'd be like, you know, what is it? The Narnia, you know, Chronicles of Narnia, like that. You know, but if you ask them, so then what do they eat? Oh, they eat the animals that don't talk. You know. I don't know. They seem to be somewhere else like that. You know, so they don't really get into it. They're trying to make it that it'll be a wonderful time. But it's just like Prabhu says, it's all about their enjoyment. Because in none of these descriptions is God there. You know? I mean, you have the thing, I think that the other ones, yeah, there's the big chair, right? He sits at the chair at the gate, right? Rather than Peter, right? God himself, you know, does it. And so then, you know, it seems to be a big armchair. So then he can point to the right or the left on whether you go to hell or you walk around God, and then behind him is the gate. So you walk around his chair and then go in. Other than that, I don't know how much is talked about. So, but the basic point is all for enjoyment. But it's interesting if you note that point. As those Abrahamic, in the first part of the creation, when Adam and Eve are in the garden and everything's going well, then God gives them, you know, whatever's there, but it's all in context of God. then when they misbehave, so they take on the material consciousness, right, the upadis, then they're given the material world and all the, you know, things that aren't nice for their enjoyment. So but it's not caught that it's all there for your enjoyment and this and that. That's part of the curse. They don't catch that part. No? Well, what to do? But yeah, that's the whole thing. It's about enjoyment. And then some will take it further, is that this heaven will descend down to earth. So I don't even have to leave. You know, I can stay in my... You know, I mean, I work so hard to get this condo. I can stay here, you know, as it comes heaven on earth. You know. So, like that. So it's all about their enjoyment. So the Mayavadis, the Karma, they're all the same. It's all about enjoying. It's just that one wants to enjoy with the facilities they have here. The other one, just they want to know I'm the controller. Because they can't... What happens, you're trying to enjoy the material nature, it's not working. Right? It's not working. So one gets frustrated. So in getting frustrated, then one wants to reject. But it still doesn't mean you don't want to control and enjoy. So therefore, then, so the emphasis, the karma is emphasis on getting the facilities to enjoy. And the, you know, because they already are confident that I'm the enjoyer. But for the others, they've lost that confidence. So they're striving for being the enjoyer. Because they can see from the scriptures, Krishna does enjoy. So Vishnu does enjoy. So they want to take that position. So that's why it says they're envious. Right? For the Brahmavadis, it's just a state of existence. Because they're not thinking beyond that. So therefore, they're not offensive. Just not complete knowledge.
Okay? It is said, right? I think Kaittiriya Upanishad, Raso Vaisaha, Rasam Hevayam, Bhavanamti Bhavati. Those who understand who is the enjoyer, they enjoy, no problem. Mm. God doesn't mind us enjoying.
Yeah.
We have to realize His supreme position, that He is Rasa.
Yeah.
So, but then, I don't know. I'm sure they read that, but what is their conclusion?
No, it's that they'll just always, because that's hermeneutics. Hermeneutics means how you interpret something. So no matter what's said, they'll interpret it in the context of their particular philosophy. But we see is that it's incomplete. It doesn't cover, it's not even logical. They logically they use logic to explain stuff, but it's not that what they're explaining is logical. So the whole point is if we accept, you know, just like Bhaktivinoda Thakura makes that point, that it's not illogical to say that God and His potency is inconceivable. By being God, He's beyond the senses, beyond the intelligence. He's inconceivable. That's not illogical to say. And so therefore, if He is inconceivable, then how can we know Him with our senses and intelligence and logic? Right, so we only know Him by His revelation. So it's very logical. You know, it's just like you don't know what's going on. When it's revealed, then you can understand. Like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, but they still, within that realm of not being able to, they demand that through their intelligence they can understand. So it'll always be a fault. You know? Plus, we're taking the Shastras, the Vedas, then are from the position of that they are.
I'm just trying to see how we
I just lost it because I saw those shoes, and then I'm thinking, did they just forget them, or did they actually leave them here on purpose?
Maybe they, in the beginning, they just forgot and
then said,
okay, I'll come back soon.
Yeah. So you were saying?
Yes, I was thinking that 87th chapter Bhagavatam, 10th canto, the personified Vedas, it's this exact same point.
Yes.
How can you realize Supreme with mundane senses?
Yes.
So the original prayers are there.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes, yes.
That is the concluding statement of all.
Oh, that's a concluding statement of all these. Okay.
Oh,
is that verse. Okay, so see. Thinking is starting to work properly.
11 years.
Yeah, so then you start to see the conclusion, you know, just like before. You know. Mataji always asks the question, and then it's the next point that's being said. So it means that that's the natural question that comes up. Okay, so.
Too complicated.
Too complicated. Okay. No, at some point we'll catch up. Okay, Purvapaksha. The Lord appears by himself after his self-manifesting Shakti in the form of Shruti dispels notions of a material object. Right, so they're saying he's manifesting by his own Shakti. And he dispels darkness when he comes. So now they're making a distinction between ignorance and then jnana, that in their form that the Lord is. And then there's Brahman. But somehow or another, this self-manifesting then is not material, but at the same time is not Brahman. But if they're worrying about material, then they've already mentioned that that's already removed. You know? So, yeah. So, thus he is not actually indicated by Shruti. Shruti only dispels misconceptions. But the point is, Shruti is mentioning how the Lord comes with his Shaktis. The Lord is like the sun which reveals itself as well as a pot when it makes its appearance. But the point is that the Lord is there and the pot is there. But, you know, yeah. Uttara. So they're thinking only the illusion of the pot, right? Uttara. This argument does not apply since Shruti and the Lord are non-different. On the other hand, if it is accepted that the Shakti and possessor of the Shakti are different, the Lord is still indicated by Shruti. For he can be described as an indescribable being. Thus Garuda Purana says, Aprasiddher avachyam tad vachyam sarva gamok titaha atarkyam tarkyam agyeyam gyeyam eva param smitam. The Lord, who cannot be described since he is unknown, is described by the statements of scriptures. The Lord is said to be beyond reason, but is subject to reasoning, and is unknowable, but is also capable of being known. Right? So what's the difference? It's that surrender to the Lord. Right? That chit-shakti. When you attain the mercy of the chit-shakti, you can understand. Also, another scripture says, Anyad eva tadvad itad ato avid itad adhi. The Lord is different from the known. He is different from the unknown. Thus we have learned. Kenu Upanishad 1.3. Right? So he's different from the known, the unknown, so he's beyond. So they accept that principle is beyond. You can't talk about it by words. But they can't actually distinguish all these positions. Right? So even their description of Brahman and the position, they say you can't describe by words, he's beyond that. So then how are they understanding it unless it's through the chit potency? So that was Jiva Goswami's original, you know, earlier point, was through the chit shakti, that's how it's working. So therefore, if it can be revealed through your mind and senses by the chit shakti, why can't that chit shakti make the words also revealed? Right? Because there is a touch of the chit shakti there that they appreciate Brahman. Right? They know they've worked in the knowledge and worked in the austerity, so that little bit of unlimited and unchanging, that much will be revealed. Even for the materialist, that much they can appreciate. But beyond that, then it has to be through surrender. Yes?
The next Adhikarana after this immediately is explaining how the original Chit Shakti can manifest in the material world also.
Oh.
Wow. Explaining Lord's internal Shaktis and then how different combinations give another Shakti and then how it reflects in the material. It's like this continuation, it will help us understand more.
Yeah, okay. Okay, Purva Paksha, so another argument. Brahman, named Bhagavan, manifesting his Shaktis, has a Swarup revealed by his self-manifesting Shakti, which is described in the Vedas. How is Brahman with no manifestation of Shakti described in scriptures and then realized? Uttara, Brahman is manifested by Bhagavan Shakti. So it's the same thing. Just as he's revealed by that Shakti, Brahman is revealed by that Shakti. Right? Because they're saying, how is Brahman? Because they're saying, okay, he's not. But what about Brahman? Because they're taking Brahman's higher. That's the same thing. It is said, Uttara, Brahman is manifested by Bhagavan's Shakti. It is said, by my mercy, you will realize my power known as the impersonal Brahman, which will be disclosed in your heart through questions and answers. Srimad Bhagavatam 8:24-38. This verse shows that Brahman is not revealed by another entity, since Brahman and Bhagavan are the same. Siddhanta. The personified Vedas draw the conclusion that all Shrutis, by their various literal and metaphorical references, ultimately describe the Supreme Personality of Godhead's identity, personal qualities, and powers. Quote, because you are unlimited, neither the lords of heaven nor even you yourself can ever reach the end of your glories. The countless universes, each enveloped in its shell, are compelled by the wheel of time to wander within you, like particles of dust blowing about in the sky. The Shrutis, following their method of eliminating everything separate from the Supreme, become successful by revealing you as their final conclusion. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:87-41. Hence, Bhagavan is the ultimate objective of all Vedic knowledge, right? So everything is that's the perfection is that the scripture reveals the Supreme Lord. Anucheda 102.
Okay, so
101 was its own Adhikarna.
Yes.
Okay. Anucheda 102. Since Bhagavatam is the best, being the highest fruit on the desire tree of the Vedas, Bhagavan, the highest tattva enunciated in the Bhagavatam, is the best, because he is the form of the most attractive knowledge. The Supreme Lord becomes immediately captured in the heart of the accomplished devotees by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and even by those who have suddenly developed the desire to hear it. This does not happen with other words. Right? It means other than the Bhagavatam, you don't see this happening. Like that. Other works, yes. In the Bhagavatam alone, created by the Lord Himself, is presented the real, permanent object which can be understood by those without selfish intentions, and which bestows auspiciousness and release from the material world of miseries. In the Bhagavatam alone is presented the process for attaining the highest object, devoid of all material goals and liberation. Srimad Bhagavatam 112. Udriti, Srila Prabhupada. From the point of view of the Vedas, or from the point of view of common human activities, sense gratification is the basis of material life. There are three paths mentioned in the Vedas. One involves fruitive activities to gain promotion to better planets. Another involves worshipping different demigods for promotion to the planets of the demigods. And another involves realizing the absolute truth in his impersonal feature and becoming one with him. Right, so then promotion of the better planets, that's the Karmakanda, then the worshipping the demigods for promotion, that's the Upasanakanda, and then you have the Jnanakanda. So the Upasanakanda, so when we talk about Upasanakanda, then you have worship of the demigods, because by worshipping the demigod themselves, you could get to their planet, right? Because one who remembers a demigod goes to wherever they are. While others are just performing a particular ritual, you know, very elaborate, because they want to get the piety to go to a particular place. for a particular kind of enjoyment. Right? And so there are basically two methods for the same thing. But as always is the point, and the jnana is then how to become freed from the material world. Right? But as we're hearing, is that yeah, okay, so we'll just go on with this one. Sorry?
When we speak about Vipassana Kanda, I think in Radha Muni's the main person in Vipassana Kanda is Radha Muni.
Yes, but the Vipassana Kanda, what he's presenting is that, sorry, that you have, sees Karma Kanda is there, but what's the perfection of action?
Knowledge,
okay. Okay, if you want to take it step by step. And then what's the perfection of knowledge?
Attaining samadhi on the Lord.
Yeah, then you get to the Lord. So the point is the same with worship. You worship the demigods, but the perfection of worship is to worship the Lord. So the same is as by performing activities, and the perfection is engaging your activities in the Lord's service. By having knowledge, you're free from material entanglement, and you're always absorbed and serving the Lord. Right? And then bhakti is that pure devotion to the Lord. So it's always going to be, the aspect is that these three are there, but they reach all the way down. Just like, let's just take the principle, so we understand this, and just reverse Ramananda Rai's conversation. Right? Because they're saying, what's the ultimate goal? So he's giving the ultimate goal there as the particular tastes of rasa, and especially the aspect of separation that Radha and Krishna are experiencing. Right? Then, step down from that is the activities of the gopis. You know, as opposed to then you have go down to the five rasas. You know, then you come to the liberated platform. Right? Then below that is someone who is renouncing things. You know, trying to give up to it. Okay, and if they can't do that, then they're performing their activities within Varnashram without an attachment to the results. Right? Because the one's taken sannyas, given up everything. The other one is giving up the fruits of their labor. Then you can't do that. And then you go down a step down from that. That you engage all your activities and everything you're doing for the satisfaction of the Lord. Right? So that's where he starts. Right? And so but you see is that now there'll be people that are below that, because it's talking about the ultimate goal. So he started off what's in contact with the Lord. Right? So you have material desire, but you fulfill that connected to the Lord. Then you give just by doing the activities, but then you give the results to the Lord. Then free yourself from all that. Then you free yourself from material entanglement and all that. Then you perform pure devotion, right? Then in pure devotion, you go up through the five rasas till you have the conjugal rasa and braj, right? So, but those people that don't start with that. So the point is he's the supreme, right? If you can't accept that, then you're going to accept as you have already before the shastras, right? As representing the Lord. But now, if you're not accepting the Lord as supreme, who's the next representatives down that are still authorized? The devatas, right? The demigods. Right? So then you're going to get into those aspects. And so, of course, then you try to stick to higher, more mode of goodness and aspects, though it's passion that you're doing. But it'll go right down to people who are totally in the mode of ignorance. So worship of, Kali Kali, Bhadra, and Bhairava. Yeah, Bhairava, Bhairavi. You're getting right, it's you're getting down. Yeah, that's it, yeah. So, this thing keeps turning. Is that all right? Maybe you need to have this a little bit shorter, then it won't turn. Unless it's a seasonal thing that it keeps turning. Yeah. There is a song about that. Right? So, So you get right down to there. Then, okay, that's the end of the Vedic culture. Right? Because what's the idea? In there is they're following scriptures, they have a guru, they have sadhana, they have a particular restrictive lifestyle, you know, to regulate themselves. And then it goes up, it gets more and more into the mode of goodness, then it goes into actually connected to the Lord, and then it comes to pure devotion, and then it comes to rati, and then it comes to like to bhava, like this. So, but now, say someone's below that level. So at least if they accept that there is a supreme, even though it's all about them enjoying themselves, and they don't have any knowledge about that, that's better than someone who doesn't accept that. Right? You know, but if someone's intellectual or things like that, then you're lower than that. You get people, it's just, it's politics, it's economics, but you're willing to follow some restrictions. Then there's those who, you know, control their senses. They only eat good things, you know, as how you say, the Acharya states, if it's not good, I don't swallow, right? Doesn't taste nice, I just don't swallow. Yeah, so like that. Does that make sense? So like this until you get any, and the tribals, they have their rules. You know, what they do and how often they go out and worship that tree or that mountain or, you know, the big round pebble in down in the middle of Australia or something like that. They have rules. You know? And so they have some respect for nature and all that. So that's the whole point, is that there's something that to control, that to bring you up through the consciousness. So from Anamoy to Pranamoy, like this, up to that, till you get to Anandamoy. Then in Anandamoy, then, you know, that principle, then you move up from there until you get to the highest transcendental ecstasy. So the whole thing is that for all these different things, the Veda is presenting it in a generic kind of language. But it has to be accessible to people who will just look at it and see their own benefit. Right? Those who are more intellectual know more broad meanings of the word. General public, then they'll just see it that this is just, I'll get my benefit. So I'll do it. Those who are there know that this benefit is, there's more. And to devotees know that that means that worship, that the performing sacrifice is to please Krishna, or you worship the devata. He's the original deva, right? And then from there it goes, and then freeing yourself from material energy. Then it's always in connection with the Lord, and so you can serve the Lord. So that's the purpose of the Vedas. So that's what's all being discussed. So that's why you can use these examples all over the Veda that may appear to be talking about other things. But no, they're actually only talking about bhakti. Right? The wordings they use, examples and that, they're talking to someone who's not interested in pure bhakti. You know? Or they're taking it that they've shown the connection, then they spend the rest of the book just talking about the details of the topic. You're supposed to keep the connection. Like, you know, like we see, Manu, it opens that the sages are saying, we know Varnashram, but we want to know Varnashram, how it connects to Vishnu. So that means the whole rest of the discussion is about how it connects to Vishnu. What is connected to Vishnu? But, as we see, most people don't catch that point. And so, that's the difficulty. Vyasadeva has written all these literatures that explain all these things, but he's the making it direct. It's not there. That's why then the point is Bhagavatam is the only one that can do that. This does not happen with other works. Right? The Supreme Lord immediately comes captured in the heart of accomplished devotees. This does not happen in other works, because other works, they'll show the connection and then just go on talking about the topic. That's why it's called aparavidya. It's the knowledge that's connected to paravidya. So, they may have a few verses within them that are paravidya, but the bulk being aparavidya. And it's just showing that aparavidya connects to the paravidya. But they're not giving a full description of paravidya. That's given in Vedanta. So, does that make sense? Yes.
among the scriptures and more Puranas and mode of goodness. We see like the Vishnu Puran, Garuda Puran, they are in also mode of goodness. They describe the position of Lord, but describing the Lord as goal is what describing the Lord as the goal.
Yes.
The Lord as goal, that is what is like very unique for Bhagavatam.
Bhagavatam, but also just how his original form.
Yes.
And so the emphasis is on him as Bhagavan and how he interacts. While the other Puranas, it'll be emphasis is on him as the Supreme Lord. Right? So that's the whole thing. So the emphasis is there. While we accept that, but he's a person. It's a person who is the Supreme Lord. That makes sense. So that's why it says the Supreme Lord becomes immediately captured. It's because that bhakti is what's brought out. The other ones, you can just know he's the Supreme and not actually catch that. So when the Acharyas explain it, then they'll catch. Right? The Shris, the Madhvas, then they'll catch. Right? The impersonal aspect of the Absolute Truth is not the highest. Right? That's what this book is. It's describing the Absolute Truth, but this level, and it connected that Bhagavan is the highest. So you're trying to show, in other words, Bhagavat Sandarbha shows the position of the three features of Krishna, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan, and what their relationship. Right? And so it shows Bhagavan is supreme, and the Brahman is then, its position. And so Brahman is fully explained, because there's not a whole lot to explain about Brahman. Right? But its relationship with the Supreme Lord is there. And how Krishna is controlling all the energies and all that. So you understand his transcendental position. But the next Sandarbha then will focus on him as Paramatma, as the Supreme Lord. And then the next as the person. So this is, you're establishing he is the Absolute Truth, but it's Bhagavan is the Absolute Truth. Above the impersonal feature is the Paramatma feature. And above this is the personal feature of the Absolute Truth, or Bhagavan. Srimad Bhagavatam gives information about the Absolute Truth in his personal feature. It is higher than the impersonalist literatures and higher than the Jnanakanda division of the Vedas. It is even higher. It is even higher than the Karmakanda division and even higher than the Upasanakanda division, because it recommends the worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. In the Karmakanda, there is competition to reach heavenly planets for better sense gratification. And there is a similar competition in the Jnanakanda and the Upasanakanda. The Srimad Bhagavatam is superior to all these because it aims at the Supreme Truth, which is the substance or root of all categories. Right? So that's the point, is all these three categories, the root is Krishna. Right? Sambandha means he is the basis or the center of all relationships. So that means all worship, he's the center, right? All ritual, he's the center. All knowledge, he's the center. Right? From Srimad Bhagavatam, one can come to know the substance as well as the categories. Right? So you understand them both from Bhagavatam. You want to get into fine technical detail, that's what the other shastras are there for. The substance is the Absolute Truth, the Supreme Lord, and all emanations are relative forms of energy. So that's the whole point. The descending is, he's the original, and everything emanating from him, all these emanations are relative forms of his energy. So they're relative to some aspect of another energy, or his position, or an incarnation, or the Brahman, like this. They're all relative to that. So that's so when you say is relative, but the point is relativity actually is in relationship to Krishna. So you say something, something subjective, it only becomes objective when it's in connection with Krishna, because he's the supreme object. Yes.
This point actually is one of the most difficult points to understand, how relativity exists in absolute. This when. I mean, my own experience, when I try to explain it to devotees, it's like my eyes get lost.
Because it's just that we're so used to that there's karma and jnana. So therefore, if you're dealing with something above the material, there can't be any material connection. And that's all. So it's just impurity. So with time, you explain it the best you can, and then you just continue. And then by regular hearing and chanting, the other services that they're doing in sadhana, then eventually it'll come around again, and one day it'll be appreciated. Because that's the point. It's not by logic. So that's why that's the importance of cutting it down to the essential point. Because you could say, oh no, but if we give a big more logical explanation, but that won't explain it. Because it's not, the Lord's not understood by logic, by knowledge. He's understood by bhakti. So, therefore, the most streamlined way that you can present the words with the potency of the chit shakti, that's clear enough that they could grasp, then that's the point. So the siddhanta, we see the siddhanta is short. So you're giving the point, and then any discussions to bring about an understanding of the siddhanta. So that's why it's because it's the big lengthy things. Like I mentioned, sometimes devotees write these articles, you know, more academic kind of articles and all that. Many times they're very big. Other articles may be smaller, but they're generally quite big, 8-10 pages. But you'll see is that you could, if you wanted to just use it as our descending process presentation, you could probably take their whole article and make it into 1 page, 1.5 pages. And it would exactly say what you want to say. But they just go and build and this and look at it this way and that and take them through. And, you know, it's a nice journey. But then, at the last one, they give the conclusion, there's no real explanation of that. So they should give some, you know, intro, give that, and then spend the rest of the 10 pages or 8 pages then explaining that. But they spend 10 pages discussing this. And then the last paragraph, they say that. Is that? Yeah. But, you know, so what to do? It's just the way it is. So you do your best, and then when it comes up again later, then you refer to it again. Like if you know that there are certain points that the particular group you're working with then are, you know, stand out in their minds, you know, are either doubts or misgivings, then whenever it comes up that angle could be presented, you bring it up again. And so again, eventually, slowly, you know, like the water wears away the stone, then eventually it starts to, instead of it, you know, being a misgiving, it just becomes a doubt, and then becomes, okay, you know, and then slowly it turns into appreciation. You'll also find there's a difference in, that you possibly may find a difference in how quickly they absorb things, depending upon what kind of service they do. Like if they're doing, if they're not absorbed in a lot of service, then it will take them longer. While you see, like a lot of times you see these devotees that come in, they pass through, you know, like the festival, and they're like preachers, you know, they're book distributors that are Harinam all day, like this and that. They'll come in very enthusiastic, come for a few days, ask a million questions, then they have no more questions, then they go back. Because it just, they just digest everything, and then up to the point that they can, and then they stop, and then they go. Because they've done so much service, then they can understand so much. But then it'll stop at a particular point, they're satisfied, and they go back to the service. Okay. So that's the idea, is that the... It's not just studying. It's studying along with. We have our sadhana, our lifestyle, our services. So that's the whole point. So it's an important part of our, process. You know, Prabhupada gave, the acharyas gave. So, otherwise, why would the acharyas write all these books? You know, if the important thing was to, you know, not do any reading, just work all day, then, you know, you know, they might have written a bit of a commentary on Bhagavad Gita and that, you know, one book and that's it, you know. Then, you know, so that's all. So they've written because they are to be read. But the point is that without service, it won't be understood. Like I mentioned, we had a librarian here. 8 hours a day, 12 hours a day, would study. The guy was amazing memory. Like, so basically, the whole library that was there, then he knew every book and everything about it. You know? So one day I said, you know, I'd like to look at a book. And his principle was, no one touches the books. You know, that was the perfection of library was, no one comes into the library, no one touches the books. You know, perfectly run library, right? You don't, no anxieties. So, he has a little bell at the door, and when he hears the bell, he comes to the door. Right? Then, you ask him, I need to see a book. And then he'll say, what book? You know, I have a question. What question? Like this, he'll keep going until you get down to exactly what you want. You mean down to the verse, practically. You know? It's something like that. It's from the Veda. Which Veda? Okay, it's from the Yajurveda. But, you know, what part? Or from the Brahmanas. Which Brahmana? Saptapada Brahmana. He says, okay. And now it's like getting, okay, what do you want to know from that? And then you say your question, he gives you the answer, and then he closes the door.
Are you sure he was not the origin of Google? Something?
Might be. But now, yeah. But the point is that he had so much knowledge and study, but he didn't go to Mangalartik, you don't think he chanted, you know, didn't really take prasad, he just cooked whatever he's doing. He didn't get in there, he was just in this, because he thought that's his service. After a few years of that, then one day, he decided to go back to his country. You know, he'd had enough of all this, so now he wants to do something practical. Right? And so then he, you know, because he knows all the books, so he also knows all the astrology, and he picked out the most perfect time to leave is on Gaur Purnima Day. Like that. You know, right during, you know, whatever is the time, when the moon comes up, when the Abhishek's going on, that's when he's leaving. You know? And so then he went back, he with his knowledge, joined the university, he's a PhD, he's, you know, professor there, not a devotee at all, nothing. So this is someone who read all of our books, studied, you know, everything. But because there was no service, then there was no assimilation. He simply memorized everything. I mean, literally. So that's the whole point, is that it has to be along with service. Then, that's the whole point. The substance is the absolute truth, the Supreme Lord, and all emanations are relative forms of energy. Prabhu was saying, is this coming up in the next adhikarana, about how one energy and another energy, and then that combination makes something else. You know, it's like you have samvit and ladini, that combination makes bhakti. So like that, and then they're derivative like this, and that unlimited energies, unlimited combinations. Dharma is described as follows. Savai pum samparo dharmo yato bhaktir adhoksajay. The highest dharma is that by which bhakti to the Lord arises. Srimad Bhagavatam 1:26. O best of the brahmanas, the complete perfection of dharma, according to the divisions of varnashram by men, is pleasing the Lord. Right? So that perfection is pleasing the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 1:2:13. So this is where you start, you know, is that you regulate your life according to God's laws to please the Lord. That's where you start. Then from there you move up. So for some, that's enough. They stop there. So that's why Lord Chaitanya said, no, more. Right? Yeah. According to this, bhakti to the Lord is the highest dharma because the only aim of dharma is to satisfy the Lord, and dharma is defined as that which produces pure bhakti. Because so if you're understanding something but not in connection with Krishna, you don't understand dharma. So if you're saying, varnashram, but you don't understand how it connects to devotional service and pleasing Krishna, like that, how it will produce bhakti, then you don't understand varnashram as dharma, or charity, or studying, or austerity, or whatever it is, all the different forms of dharma. If you don't understand how it will produce pure bhakti, you know, its position in helping produce that, then you don't understand dharma. Just like philosophy, you don't understand how Krishna, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as Bhagavan, as the Supreme Absolute Truth, then you don't know philosophy. So the same way, dharma, if you don't understand how it connects to Krishna as a person, you don't know dharma. You know, in devotion. Yes.
It's interesting, the second chapter of the first canto, it gives the whole thing up to reaching the stage of bhava and prema.
In the first canto?
This 13th verse, this is?
Oh, in the second chapter. Yeah, so you see, right immediately it's all presented. And then there'll be so much detail in going through and all that, and then you'll see, it'll conclude with all that. But all throughout, it's just showing how each thing, Kardama and his position, how he attained perfection, how the other kings like that, they attained, then how Prahlad Maharaj attained, like that. Because bhakti is the final goal of dharma, in the Bhagavatam, that dharma which seeks other results, kaitava, is completely pra-rejected, ujjitam. The word pra indicates that all types of liberation, like salokya, are also rejected. Since bhakti is the only goal of dharma, it is for persons without envy, matsara. Persons who desire, because envious is like we were saying, they're envious of the Lord. He's the enjoyer. He's enjoying. I want to be the enjoyer. I can't enjoy. So therefore, they want to become God. Right? And so God's already God, so therefore, I can't become God to replace him, but I can merge into him, and in this way, I'm God. You know, it's like those, I don't know if they do it anymore, but it used to be very common sci-fi kind of thing, is that there's some alien, and then it connects to one person, and then connects to everybody's consciousness, and controls everybody, and... No? Never heard of those? Okay. Maybe it's quite an old one. I think it's when I was a kid that one was going on.
Now they have new things, and one guy's connected to everybody.
Oh. Yeah, it's basically the same thing. It's just, you know, a variation of, so we're all one. You know? Yeah, okay. What's that guy? Agent Smith? Okay. Persons who desire material results cannot tolerate excellence in other people. Right, so how you'll explain excellence in God, unless by approaching God you can get excellence. Then it's all right. As long as God's providing you with stuff, then it's all right, he's cool. This also stands for person without compassion who perform animal sacrifices. Thus, Bhagavatam is meant for those with compassion. It is also for devotees who follow Swadharma, Satam, for it is superior to Karmakanda, Upasana Kanda, which promote Dharma. Since those scriptures do not promote compassion and lack of envy to the same degree, right? So that's why the Bhagavatam is for those who are near Matsaranam, free from envy. So therefore they can be completely... If you're free from envy, then you can also be free from material desire. And if you're free from those two, then you can perform devotional service without desire for karma or jnana. So pure devotional service. Right? So... envy and attachment, that gets in the way of pure devotion. Does that make sense? Yeah. And direct bhakti, such as chanting, is of course minimized in these scriptures. It is also superior to branches of jnana, like direct bhakti, then they won't be brought out because people won't do it. It is also superior to branches of Jnanakanda. In Jnana scriptures devoid of bhakti, the real truth which is represented in Bhagavatam cannot be ascertained. The truth is understood, Vedyam Vastavam, in Bhagavatam. This is the knowledge to be known. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki.